Hi everyone, welcome to our podcast, Young Minds Matter, a talk show for you and I by Health Club. You might be wondering, what is you and I? We are a youth-focused nonprofit to help unite and inspire younger generations to make an impact in our community through volunteering, with our youngest volunteer being just 5. Our volunteers are not just children though. We have teens, adults, and senior citizens helping out in our community. I am Sriram.
I'm Saranya.
And we are your hosts for today. We welcome you all to our podcast, and the topic of the show today will be about vaccines. Last episode, we talked with our very own community club about ways we can get involved with under-resourced communities. But today, we're shifting gears to learn more about vaccine awareness. With us today, we have our special podcast guest and vaccine subject matter expert, Dr. Ronke Adefisayo. A huge welcome to you, Dr. Adefisayo, on today's episode.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Adefisayo is a double board certified physician in pediatrics and pediatric infectious disease. She attended Howard University for her undergraduate and medical education before completing residency and fellowship in Stony Brook, Long Island Children's Hospital. With extensive experience in rural Mississippi, Dr. Adefisayo has dedicated parts of her career to improving healthcare access for underserved populations. She currently works and resides in Houston, Texas as a newborn hospitalist and is faculty at Texas Children's Hospital, Baylor College of Medicine, providing care to the youngest and most vulnerable patients. We are so excited to discuss more with you on the topic of vaccines, Dr. Adefisayo. Would you like to say a few words about your background before we get into today's episode?
Yes, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for the good work you're doing. I'm very honored to be here, especially to talk about this incredibly important topic. I have personal stories and also professional stories about the importance of vaccines. I grew up myself in Lagos, Nigeria, in West Africa, and so I'm very familiar with the impact of vaccine-preventable diseases. And moving here to the U.S. for college and then for medical school, and then also working in Mississippi and then moving to Houston, working in Long Island, I've just had a host of experiences surrounding vaccines and children and just overall just advocating for health for our youngest population. So I'm very glad to be here.
Thank you for sharing that, Dr. Adefisayo. So today, the focus is on how vaccines are portrayed in the public health scene and how we can reduce vaccine skepticism and promote more awareness. And I feel like one of the biggest reasons people are skeptical about vaccines today are they're not really knowing the differences between the types of vaccines that are injected into their bodies and how that could affect them. So the first question that I would have tonight are, what are some of the differences between live, inactivated, and mRNA vaccines?
That's a really good question. And I think it's important to note that even though they're all different, they all have the same outcome, which is to train your body to be prepared in the instance that you have an infection. So they all do the same thing, but they all do it in different ways. And I'll just go briefly into all three of them. There's what you call live vaccines, or we call them live attenuated vaccines. And attenuated just means weakened. Basically, you have a weakened form of the virus. It can still replicate, but it often does not cause disease in healthy individuals. And really, what you're really trying to do is show your body, this is what this virus looks like, produce an immune response to it. And then when you actually come across the virus, you're already protected. Same thing for inactivated, or what we call killed vaccines. So it's all in the name, you know, live versus inactivated or killed. And these ones usually have been killed or inactivated, so they can't even cause disease. They cannot replicate. And they have the same effect. They basically train your immune system to recognize an infection ahead of time. The newest, and I think, which has been the most controversial in the general population, has been the mRNA vaccines. And these ones, you know, really have been in the works, but I think COVID really kind of turbocharged mRNA vaccines. And we only have the COVID vaccines, which are mRNA vaccines. But in the simplest way to describe it, they essentially are not whole or live vaccines. They actually take a piece of mRNA, what we call like a messenger RNA, and they tell your cells, okay, this is what we want you to do. In the case of COVID, for example, COVID attaches to your cells with what we call a spike. So your mRNA vaccine essentially will instruct your cells, not mRNA vaccine, well, mRNA vaccine will instruct your cells to produce spikes that look like the COVID spike so that your body then mounts an immune response towards that particular virus. In this case, COVID. I think COVID is the only one we have on the market right now, or out, in general population. So those are some of the three big differences about the way they work. But like I said, they all have the same effect, and they've all been proven to be highly effective and very safe.
Wow, that was actually really interesting. I didn't realize that there was like I knew about like live vaccines, but I didn't really understand what like inactivated or like mRNA vaccines did. So that's actually really nice to know. And I'm shocked that there's like such differences and like similarities between all of them.
It's very interesting. And I think it does go back to how many of them were originally sort of produced and sort of,
Oh.
generated. And, even to talk about one of the major criticisms of the COVID vaccine is how, why was it produced so quickly? Why did it come so quickly? Because it would take about 8 years originally for things like the rubella vaccine or like the measles vaccine. It took a really long time, but that was because a lot of the data and a lot of the science we didn't have. And over the years, the science has improved to the point where we're now able to produce these things much quicker, and also really, I think, more safely, I would say, because, unfortunately, in the past, some of the live attenuated vaccines were not maybe as attenuated as we would have hoped. So we did have some people actually getting disease from the vaccine, but that was much more common in the early days, like with things like smallpox, which, we really don't see anymore. So it's been a very interesting and history with the vaccines.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting. And like all these vaccines are important, just like throughout your whole life, it's always good to like get like flu shots and whatever. So like, what would you say during childhood? What would be the most important vaccine to get?
And that's a very good question, but I'm the wrong one because I think all of them are very important to get. But I do think that there's some that are more critical at certain stages of life than others. So I do think, there is some nuance to it. I would say, for example, the rotavirus vaccine. This is mostly important for children under about 9 months old because rotavirus can cause very severe diarrheal illness that can actually lead to death, which is one of the leading causes of death in many of, in the developing world or lower middle income countries. Excuse my language. But after the age of one, most children are able to tolerate that type of infection better. So it has a limited time, almost like time span where it's most important to get it. Things like rubella vaccine, it's a mild illness, but it really is very important for example, women who are in childbearing age who have small children because it's the worst for pregnant women and their fetuses. So there is some nuance. I do think that things like, for example, the measles virus and the measles vaccine is very important because measles has such a high rate of infectivity. You don't even have to be in the same room as someone who has measles. They just had to have been there like an hour before you, and you can get measles. So I do think that, there is, like I said, a lot of nuance. I think all of them are important, but at different stages, some I do think are much more critical than others.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Dr. Adifisayo. And definitely with the measles outbreak going on in Texas right now, I think just emphasizing how critical it is to take all of these important childhood vaccines would very, very much help reduce these epidemics overall and help prevent these diseases in children and growing up children in general. And just to follow up here, I know that RSV, a disease, is very, very common in children. Is there any way to prevent RSV with perhaps a vaccine currently, or is that really not what's in the market right now?
That is such a good question. I think because RSV is actually, and I think Dr. Atish Raj will agree with this, it's such a serious infection in small children, especially. You have small children having these this infection of their lungs, of their airways, that can lead to coughing, congestion, being really sick, pneumonias. So a lot of pediatricians would love to have a vaccine against RSV. And I do think that there are some studies going on currently. But many years ago, I would say about the 60s or the 70s, there was actually an RSV vaccine that was being developed. Unfortunately, it was shown to not be very effective. And some of the children who got it actually seemed to get worse disease. It almost like it primed their immune system so that when they were exposed to RSV, they actually got worse RSV infections. So that was stopped. And so that's why, we talk about how, vaccines are amazing, but they do need a lot of studying. They do need a lot of testing, a lot of safety, and really kind of like watching their efficacy. You want to make sure they actually work, because even if they're safe and they don't work, then there's no point. So yes, we are hopeful that somewhere down the line there will be a vaccine. Currently, there are the antibodies, what we call like the antibodies that are pretty popular now for that prevent RSV. So it's not a vaccine in the sense that it doesn't teach your immune system to fight RSV, but what it does, it almost like gives you the immunity for a period of time. So we do have that, and I think there's some more things in the works.
Well, that is a very interesting way to combat RSV with antibodies and just learning about the history of a potential RSV vaccine. And with so many vaccines, not only given within the early life, but also in general throughout a person's living period, why would some of these vaccines last a lifetime while others, sometimes like the COVID vaccine, require periodic boosters?
Another excellent question. I think in an ideal world, all of them would last a lifetime. But it really boils down to a number of things. It really boils down to what type of vaccine it is. We talked about live versus inactivated versus like the mRNA vaccines. What we've seen is that the live vaccines, I think because they are live, even though they're weakened, your body tends to mount a much more robust immune response to it that can last a lifetime. So things like yellow fever, those are the yellow fever vaccine, those tend to last about a lifetime. And then you have the inactivated vaccines where unfortunately they don't mount as robust a response. Your immune system does not respond quite as robustly and very critically does not always mount the types of immunity that you need. So we have like B cell, antibody mediated immunity and T cell, which I won't go into detail about, but basically memory versus, so it's, and so if you have vaccines that don't basically involve the whole of your immune system, they tend to wane in their protection. And then some vaccines also have adjuvants. They have things that are added to them that make them more immunogenic. Like it makes like Hep B. Hep B has has some adjuncts to it or adjuvants. I never say the word right that make it more immunogenic so that you have a higher response. So there are those things. And I think with the mRNA vaccine, with COVID, part of the challenge as well is that there's some viruses that don't change over time. Like the measles virus is not evolving. It's the same measles virus versus like the COVID, which has different strains. So even if you do have some immunity against it, it tends to sorry, excuse me. Even if you do have some immunity against COVID, one strain, you may not have against another strain.
That's good to know. It's good to hear that like you're gonna have to kind of keep boosting up other stuff. Fortunately, not everything does last for a long period of time, but I guess maybe in the future with newer technology.
Yes, absolutely. And as we study more and understand more of what causes some vaccines to last more of a lifetime, and there's some bacteria and some viruses that have like what we call evasion mechanisms. So, like pertussis. So you do get immunity, but then the bacteria develops some evasion against, what immunity you have. So you can still have. So it's really a complex situation, and it's sort of evolving. But I think as time goes on, it'll get better.
Yeah. With all like these extra shots you're gonna have to take, I know sometimes people are scared of needles. I'm actually quite scared of needles. So every time I have to go get a shot, I'm like going shaking. I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to do this. But I've heard like people also kind of fear like the idea that vaccines can kind of overwhelm a child's immune system? Would you say there's like any real scientific evidence to support that, or?
And that's a very common concern. A lot of people say, why would you give a 9-month-old, this many vaccines? And the truth is that actually, from the time you're born, you're exposed to a ton of things. You're constantly being exposed on your skin and the environment around you. You're constantly being exposed. So it's there's no data that supports that your immune system would be overwhelmed. Are there some people that potentially have weakened immune systems and we were not aware, and then maybe got the vaccines and sort of had poor outcomes? Yes, there probably are. And I think around the world, they did see this with the BCG vaccine, which is not done here, against TB. If they gave it to children who had immunodeficiencies, like they had something missing in their immune system, but we were not aware before they got the vaccine, it actually could have bad outcomes. But a normal, healthy child with a normal immune system should not be overwhelmed by the number of vaccines. And the truth be told is, it's even though the concern, we always want to meet people where they are. There's many things that the benefit really, really outweighs the risk of the concerns.
That's really reassuring to hear that for a healthy child, like most people, that our immune system will react perfectly fine to our vaccines, because the immune system, like you were saying earlier, is exposed to countless microbes, countless bacteria every day. So those vaccines, if I understood it correctly, are just a tiny fraction of what our immune system could theoretically handle.
Absolutely.
Right. So I think this also connects to another really common belief that catching a disease naturally might actually provide better immunity than a vaccine. So how does vaccine immunity actually compare to catching the disease naturally? Does the vaccine grant better or worse immunity?
And this is a highly, I would say, highly debated topic. A lot of people, especially in certain communities, really believe this, that it's better to catch the disease and you'll have a lifetime immunity against it. And I think that, what the studies have shown is that you really vaccine-induced immunity is ultimately safer and it's more controlled, right? Because sort of like we saw recently with the child who had measles and had pneumonia, ultimately passed away, we can't tell who's going to have very serious adverse reactions to getting the disease naturally. And that's why many of these things were developed, because children are dying and having, a lot of morbidity or having a lot of side effects from the disease itself. So this really, I think, vaccine-induced immunity is really the safest way to develop this type of infection, because you're really not putting the person at major risk for some of the morbidity from some of these other of viruses. And I think, that it's important to note that it's almost like training yourself, training your you're actually just helping the immune system. You're not doing anything that it wouldn't do normally. You're sort of helping it do what it would normally do, but ahead of time, so that it's prepared. And in terms of your question about lasting immunity, there's been talk about that, I think, especially with things like measles, about how, lasting immunity. But we've seen, with proper vaccination with things like the measles vaccine, that you have equivalent antibody long-term lasting immunity. So I would argue that vaccine-induced immunity is much safer and much more controlled with similar effects.
I was kind of wondering, so you're saying that, our immunity can't really get built up if we get the sickness.
It can, if
It,
we
I mean, it can, but, it's a little more dangerous because obviously you'll be going through the effects.
Yes.
So I was just kind of wondering, would the, would one's immunity get worse if they were, constantly getting sick? Because, I read somewhere online, it was talking about how, if you're getting sick, it's gonna strengthen your immunity, obviously, which isn't 100% wrong, as you said, but there's higher chance of risk. And just me personally, I've been getting sick left and right, this whole past month. So I was just wondering how much truth is that?
It's a good question. And I have to say, there is some nuance to that, right? In the sense that if you are sick, for example, and you're already in a weakened state, and then you get something else on top of that, you do tend to do worse. I think that is what the science and the data would support. But in terms of, and you know, and different parts of the world also have different demographics, right? You know, we talk about some viruses, you know, that a lot of children will have in parts of like lower middle income countries very young. So they have them very young. So by the time they're like teenagers, they don't get some of the things that, you know, children here get because they're less exposed. And so it can be worse in them. But even then, children who get some of these things really young can later on have worse side effects from having gotten it. I'll use an example of something like measles, right? You could have had measles as a child and recovered, but then there are cases, many cases, where in 40 years you have a type of encephalitis, a type of infection in your brain because the measles virus is sort of still circulating in your system. So that's why
Sort
we
of
say,
like a relapse, kind of.
well, relapse is not the word I would use, but almost like it's you're not getting the original infection. That's
Oh,
good, but it's located now somewhere in your brain, and now it's showing up in a different way. So almost like, you know, almost like how you have something just hiding, and then as you get older and your immune system is not as robust as it used to be, then it kind of shows up again in a different way. So, you know, it's and of course our immunity, everybody's immunity is sort of different. Like it's not a one size fits all, right? For example, little children have, especially babies, have way worse immunity than the rest of us. And older people sort of have, you know, worse immunity as well. That's why we saw in COVID that, you know, older people were much more affected, or people who were sick, who had other you know, who had other diseases like diabetes or other comorbidities. So there's so many factors that get into like your immunity, like, you know, like you talk about your health. If you're getting back-to-back infections, it can feel like the worst thing because you're not fully recovered before something else comes in. So it's not so much that your immune system is overwhelmed as you're fighting constant battles. So you're tired. But I do understand why people have that concern because it can feel that way.
Well, I definitely agree about like feeling overwhelmed with like fighting all these diseases, like sicknesses and whatnot. But you know how nowadays social media is like a pretty big thing, especially in like the newer generations? So, like, with social media fueling the rapid spread of vaccine misinformation, especially about herd immunity, how can someone like fact check these claims online? And is it, would you say it's wise to trust claims that vaccination isn't needed when there's like herd immunity?
Those are critical points. And I think we saw that with COVID, especially. I think, you know, public health has to evolve with the times. And of course, they're doing their best. But, you know, back in the day, you know, I'm old enough to know a time before cell phones were everywhere, or before those Instagram or Instagram Live, or you know what I mean? Or those, my parents have been around old enough to know when there's no such thing as a cell phone or the internet, right? So it's now with social media, we need more voices, and we also need non-medical voices, actually. I would argue that we need some more lay people who to talk about these things, to fact check some of these, because there's a very rapid proliferation, right? The time that it takes to prepare a whole formatted kind of like flyer, someone else is in their kitchen talking about vaccines and how terrible they are and all the side effects that they had, you know, and there's been such a mistrust of the system that clearly there needs to be some an overhaul in the communication of how vaccines are sort of rolled out, right? So I've heard Dr. Francis Collins, who was the head of the NIH, talk about how when things were happening with COVID and they were like shutdowns and the vaccine and this and that, people started to mistrust because scientists, we didn't just come out and say, we don't know everything. We're learning as we go. This is what we're seeing, and this is what we think works, and that's why we're trying this. And if you see that this is not necessary, we'll roll it back. And so, but people felt like they were like getting mixed messages. Oh, shut down, but use masks, but not always. Get the vaccine, but we can do with herd immunity. You know, so I think there really is a lot of work that needs to be done in the space of communication and influence, and we have to change our approach. And herd immunity is very important, but ultimately, we talk about how, if anybody watched Game of Thrones, they talk about how, like, the or if you've read anything similar to it, how it's the lone wolf that gets taken away from the herd. Well, that really in public health is like the little children who can't get vaccinated, so who depend on the rest of us to get vaccinated so they don't get diseases, or older people, or people who are immunocompromised, like people who have cancer who are undergoing treatments and so they can't get vaccines. So herd immunity is very important, but it requires a really high level of compliance for it to be effective, right? As we've seen with measles, right? All you need is just a few clusters of people to not be vaccinated for it to sort of rear its head again. So even though it's very important, it does require, I think some studies say almost as much as 95% of the population to maintain that herd immunity. That is really high. So, and the 5% argue would be like the little children and older people and immunocompromised people. So, and I think we saw this as well with how the COVID response is here in some parts of the world. In some parts of the world, they did not have shutdowns. They did not have any of that. They just said, let the people who are going to get it get it. Let everybody get infected and let's basically build herd immunity. And it didn't work out quite as well as I think many of them hoped it would.
Well, I think that is such an important point where herd immunity isn't really something that we can just like say that it's there passively. And I think it's something we have to like create through mass vaccination for the people that are able to. Like you said, 95% of the people at least should be vaccinated. I think that's a really, really high proportion to say that herd immunity has been established. And just to echo what you've been saying over the last few questions, just to recap here, are there any other potential side effects, diseases, or ingredients that anyone in general should be worried about, specifically like vaccine skeptics?
That's a great question. I do say that I do understand that vaccines and vaccinations, if you go through the history of vaccines and vaccinations, have had a bit of a checkered history in the sense that they have been a massive success, but there have been times where things, even though they're well-intentioned, could have been done better. But of course, hindsight is 20/20 and it's easy to say. So there are some concerns about some ingredients, many of which no longer exist in the current vaccines that we have, but people still persist in talking about them because, historically they were there, right? A big one is the aluminum that people talk about. And they say, oh, it's in the vaccines. And one of the reasons they're there is that they're adjuvants. They do boost the immune system. And so they do what we talk about and get you to mount a higher immune response so that you have more protection, essentially, in simplistic terms. But the amounts in the vaccines are so tiny that even how much you consume daily is higher than you'd ever get in the vaccines. So, it's really not a very valid concern anymore. You may understand why people still talk about it. Another very popular thing that people are always concerned about is thimerosal. Say that right, thimerosal, which used to be in some vaccines and it still is in some of the multi-dose flu vaccines. But because it does help prevent bacterial contamination, but these things are eliminated very quickly from the body. And a very, very popular one that people are concerned about now is actually with the COVID vaccines, with the mRNA that is injected into that comes with the vaccine. A lot of people are worried that that mRNA gets included in your DNA. So there's these misconceptions about, well, the vaccine is going to change your DNA, it's going to change, change your DNA from, completely for generations to come. But what the producers and the studies have shown is that that mRNA actually is it dissolves. It doesn't become part of your DNA in any way, shape, or form. So I think it's good to acknowledge that some vaccines can cause things like the flu vaccine. Sometimes we've seen allergies, we've seen some severe side effects. And even with the COVID vaccine, some people did have inflammation of the lining of their heart. They had myocarditis, they had pericarditis, but these are one in like 50,000. So not common, but enough that you would understand why some people would be concerned. But overall, net net, I do think that the benefits do outweigh the risks tremendously. But I do think that people who do have concerns should be addressed regarding each of their concerns. It's a chance. But I will note that most vaccines, in fact, all vaccines, are tested very carefully before they are released into general public consumption.
Well, I didn't know that like there were like these ingredients and like all these things that were part of the development of vaccines. So good to know that they're working in there, doing their job.
And yes, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us today, Dr. DeFisayo. We really, really appreciated the knowledge you brought to the table today in what's in our vaccines and whether there should really be skepticism surrounding our vaccines. So, is there anything, just to recap, that you'd like to add for our listeners tuning in?
Well, this has been a great session and you've asked wonderful, wonderful questions. And I think vaccines are so intertwined with sort of our social history as human beings. And you know, over the years, even if you go back and look at, like I said, the history of vaccines from the very first vaccines and the very first like vaccine campaigns, there've always been people who are skeptical. There'll always be people who are like, oh, you know, skeptical of science, skeptical of the government, skeptical of anything that is put into their body. So it's not a new thing. But I do think that now, especially with the resurgence of some of these diseases that we never used to see anymore is a great opportunity for all of us to get educated and to educate friends and family and to meet them where they are, understand their concerns, and sort of work with them to basically achieve a healthier life for all of us. And I do think that it is possible that you know one of our you know one of our the underlying things that we do as social creatures, which we are as human beings, is that you know we look out for each other and we look out for ourselves. So you know, as we work on improving our vaccination rates around the country and being an example around the world, I do look forward to the days where some of these things will be things of the past completely.
Once again, thank you so, so, so very much, Dr. Adetisayo, for this valuable conversation we had today. Listeners, please stay tuned for our next episode. This is Young Mind Matters, signing off.